As the economy shows further signs of strain, what can the government do in this week's budget to get the country on the road to economic recovery? 41,000 more people have gone on to the JobSeeker benefit since February. Government spending has skyrocketed $4 billion more than expected. The Crown's books now with a deficit of $2.7 billion for the 9 months ended March, compared with what had been a forecast surplus of $1.3 billion. Our official debt now sits at 21.3% of gross domestic product, but Thursday's budget is set to reveal a wall of debt in Treasury's projections that will see debt to GDP soar. How ambitious will Thursday's budget be? Will there be more targeted support for individual sectors? How will the government try to stimulate spending? Will there be widespread welfare changes, and should there be? And just how much debt can the country afford to take on? To discuss, we welcome Infometrics economist Brad Olson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morena to Shamabil Jakob from Sense Partners.
Morena.
And Ata Marie to ANZ Chief Economist Sharon Zolner.
Good morning.
Brad, can we just begin with you? We know what's happening. Unemployment rising, spending and debt rising. What are you expecting to be revealed on Thursday?
Look, I think there's a couple key areas that the government has to come out quite swiftly on. Firstly is whether or not it's going to extend the wage subsidy or otherwise provide some sort of stimulus or activity for businesses. They are still hurting, and I think it's important to recognise that we're not out of the woods yet and we won't be for a while. There's still many more job losses to come. As well as that, I think we need to see a real keen focus on education and how we actually get all of these people back into the labour force with the right skills for the right jobs in the future. If we don't have both of those planks laid down, I think we're in for a much greater world of pain.
Is this going to be as much about setting a path on some of the things you're indicating? Should we expect that as much as detail on some factors, perhaps excluding what happens to the wage subsidy?
Yeah, I think we need to have two elements. First is, what are those details of the response package? What are we doing for the next 6 to 9 months to ensure that businesses keep operating, to ensure that households can actually pay their bills? But we also need to start setting the stage for the future. What are the plans that we have as we move forward? What are those different mechanisms that the government is ready to bring in, and how do the rest of the economy, businesses, households, educators, how do they prepare for this very rapid change we're likely to see?
What's your view on the degree to which small and medium-sized businesses have been supported?
I think they've definitely had support. Whether or not it's enough, I would probably say not quite at the moment. Certainly under level three, the amount of spending we've seen coming through hasn't been nearly as much as a lot of retailers had hoped for. And so I suspect if you're a small business out there, you're still paying your bills, you're still having to keep on your workers, but the amount of money you've got coming in the door is not nearly as much as you'd hoped. So that those cost pressures, that cash flow issue is still very much in play. And I think what the government should really look at doing is seriously considering the National Party's initiative for getting a bit more cash back into businesses, straight money in hand.
And that proposal, the mechanism for that is?
The GST cashback. I think it's a worthwhile idea that Treasury should be looking into to get money back into businesses and I guess make sure that's based on how much outgoings they have previously had, how much turnover they've previously had in the last 6 months or so.
On the question of businesses making hard decisions, we know that wage subsidy is due to, well, decisions have to be made effectively now by the time you count for a redundancy period. Is it also going to see, whatever comes out with, there's more targeted support for wages in some industries, is it also a time where a lot of businesses are going to make their big medium-term call? And if so, and some of the projections for unemployment are realised, some saying as many as 300,000 on the benefit, JobSeeker benefit by September. What should be in this budget about their transitions? Do you just leave them receiving a benefit, or can you be more proactive in programs you can introduce for people to try and make their transitions, Brad?
I think we've got to be realistic about what the labour market looks like as we move forward. there's a lot of businesses who have received the wage subsidy. They've got to keep their workers on until the end of June. But after that, the economic realities are, for a lot of them, they will not need the same number of workers, and that is going to see more people laid off. But you're right. I think what the government does need to come out with is a very coordinated plan for where do those people go. Do they go home and sit around until a job appears in a year's time and risk becoming a long-term dependent? Or do we have something in the interim that we can get them going on, some sort of volunteering or community activity, education of some degree, that they can actually remain part of the economy, remain part of the community, keep going, so that when we do find a job for them, they can get back into employment much faster instead of just sitting around on their hands.
What are some of the options in that area of education? There's a lot of talk about fees-free education. There had actually been a very low uptake when it came to actual new bums on seats as a result of that prior to all this happening. But in the circumstances now, is there actually an opportunity to not only keep it going, but possibly expand and or amend it?
I think the amending it is the key focus. It needs to change quite substantially from how it's currently envisaged. At the moment, it's a bit of a free-for-all, and I think instead it needs to be much more targeted. In fact, around the country, we've got regional skills leadership groups which are being stood up. They will integrate employers, you know, people that are actually going to have jobs to offer, along with those education providers, to make sure that when we are having these people retrained, that they're being retrained for what the industry is going to need in the future. So understanding actually around the country, do we need more fruit pickers in certain areas? Do we need more IT specialists? If where we have identified skills gaps, we should be trying to fill them. And that's something that New Zealand has failed on for many, many years.
Thank you, Brad. Bringing in Shamabil now, if I may. Is the talk of recovery a little premature in some ways? Everyone needs to start thinking that way in order not to be paralysed, Shamabil. But really, are we still in crisis management mode in this budget?
We are. Look, we need to be patient. This is the mother of all recessions, and we've only been through the first act, which was the closing of the economy to prioritize health. We still have the consequences of that to come through. I kind of think about this in three waves. The first is kind of just the health panic and the close down. The second part is kind of the job losses and business failures as a result of almost no revenue and insufficient support over the course of the last couple of months. And the recession proper that hits, you know, the decline in trade, the job losses, the self-fulfilling kind of nature of recession. So really, this year is going to be quite a hard year for businesses and the economy. And the recovery is something we should talk about because that is what we need to plan for. But I think we need to put it in two parts. One is, how do we blunt the pain? And then how do we think about encouraging and nurturing that recovery? Because we're going to have to do it differently to how we have done it in the past 40 years.
So what are you looking for in this budget for each of those two steps?
The first is, I think, on the welfare system, we really need to see a much more generous process. So we need to make sure that the MSD is working as an usher rather than a bouncer. Try and give people as much support as possible, because it's really important that we dent the impact of unemployment. Because, you know, when we see the data for New Zealand, when you lose a job, your income is likely to fall somewhere between 25 and 80%. That's a huge financial stress that will mean that you can't meet your mortgage payments, rent payments, utilities payments, those kinds of things. As well, we need to make sure that those sort of, you know, historic things around if you have a partner who's working, you can't access the benefit. Those kinds of issues are things we need to really get on top of right now, because otherwise we're going to see the pain of unemployment worsened for the most vulnerable. The second part is making sure that when we're thinking about the recovery, we are thinking about it in the effectiveness sense. That's because in the past we've relied on the Reserve Bank to do the recovery stuff, you know, cutting interest rates, getting people to borrow more money. Well, that's not going to happen this time because interest rates are already low and we're up to our eyeballs in debt. And the government needs to lay out a bit of a priority plan of how is it that it's going to assess where it spends this money. And I know we've heard lots of about shovel-ready projects, but the reality is if we're going to do lots of things like infrastructure projects that are great for the infrastructure sector, unfortunately, it doesn't help in terms of the job losses that are across the economy.
Could we stay with welfare for a moment? What do you see as logical, immediate changes. We've seen, for example, even the legality of the redundancy matter now being revealed through, you know, RNZ's reporting, that actually you don't have to run through your redundancy before you can go on a job seeker benefit, and yet that appears to have been the way things have been applied. You mentioned the partner working and the impact that has on the household income. I mean, many might say, to be fair, why wasn't this done before now? But what difference would it make if it is done now?
Well, the difference, of course, is that we're going to see many hundreds of thousands newly unemployed who are going to face the brutal reality of unemployment and our welfare system. The reality is that the income that you get on the benefit is subsistence level, and it is really not enough to live on comfortably, certainly not from the lifestyles or the expenditures and commitments people might have had with, you know, their family incomes in employment in the past. So I don't think we need to look too far. We've had a number of reviews when it comes to the welfare system, most recently their welfare advisory expert group. And, you know, the recommendations there are things we could pick up. They don't have to be done straight away, but signaling that that's where we're going is a good step. But making sure that we're able to absorb those people who are losing their jobs as quickly into their welfare role as possible, I think, is something we have to do. The flexibility we've seen, for example, in rolling out the wage subsidy is the kind of flexibility that we need to see on unemployment benefits, because even if the level is low, it's better if people have something rather than nothing and having to wait.
Abatement rate's another area where there really needs to be far more flexibility than normal so that people can take on short-term work or part-time work without
exactly
having to upset their benefits.
And I think one of the things we have to try and encourage is, you know, there's quite a lot of talk about this in some states in the US, is if you lose your hours, let's pay that person for the lost hours or some level of compensation so that they can still live a reasonably comfortable life. And ultimately what we're talking about is, here is a huge recession where we're going to see many hundreds of thousands of New Zealanders who are going to be unemployed. And we don't want them to go into such financial distress that we see the economic pain being worsened. If we can blunt it, it is going to have a big impact. But it also reduces the well-known economic, financial and well-being impacts that we know comes from unemployment and job loss.
Shama Bill, thank you. Sharon Zona, Chief Economist of ANZ. Just picking up on that issue, there could be two schools of thought. I mean, one is the amount of debt that is being run up here, and we're going to turn to questions later about intergenerational equity. But on the question of unemployment, the one thing you do not want is to have a large blowout that lasts. Do you believe paying up front now could help mitigate medium and longer term unemployment? What are your views?
Well, yes, that's absolutely the aim of the wage subsidy, and some of it will end up being poorly targeted. That's inevitable, just delaying layoffs by 12 weeks. But I think it's also clear that some jobs will have been saved out of this, because and all the economic data shows that once you become long-term unemployed, it's really, really difficult to get back on the boat and get awful outcomes in terms of people's health and well-being if they are out of the workforce permanently. And we saw that in America, for example. After the global financial crisis, there was a whole cohort of older males, particularly, who never did manage to get back on their boat. So I think that was why the wage subsidy was an excellent idea. But it does perhaps need to be more targeted from here on in. But there the issue is that the sectors that are most negatively affected are also the ones that actually need to adapt to the new reality. There's no point in trying to put our international tourism sector in stasis. It's just going to cost the taxpayer an arm and a leg. And in the end, you know, many business models are not going to be viable for quite a long time, and we actually have to face up to that.
So are you suggesting a much more targeted wage support scheme if there is one in the budget?
Well, that's actually been indicated by the government. Yes, I mean, the wage subsidy scheme is enormously expensive, and in the end, this is borrowed money. It's, it needs to be paid back sometime, and that goes back to those issues of intergenerational fairness that you touched on.
On the question of what to do with the unemployment benefit, however, and two schools of thought there, if people are able to stay somewhere near incomes and retain some kind of discretionary income, then obviously that helps the economy overall. But what is your view on whether there should be much more generous benefits or rules around benefits because we're heading for 10% unemployment?
Well, that's the challenge. In an ideal world, you would have very generous unemployment benefits when there are no jobs to be had, and then you'd turn around and be quite stingy when there are jobs everywhere, and because you disincentivise people to enter the workforce with generous benefits. But at times when there are no jobs to be had, then obviously all these issues about well-being and stuff come into play. But the fact is it's very, very difficult to move benefits down. I think we've done it once in New Zealand history, and it was pretty divisive. So it's very difficult in practice to have that kind of cyclicality in benefits. But in order to avoid fiscal blowouts, maybe the solution is something a bit more temporary, some sort of version of this helicopter money that's been thrown around, but perhaps a helicopter with well-aimed targeting rather than just splashing it all over the economy, because, again, we do have limited fiscal resources.
Is it not even about the level of benefits so much as accessibility in things like partner income, things like abatement rates and being able to quickly move in and out of part-time jobs? We're seeing a lot of legislation passed at the moment that's temporary, that's got a two-year time limit on it. Could that happen here too and avert the political problem you're alluding to at the other end?
Yes, well, I guess you could start out by making things generous but temporary. And there's a range of ways that you could do that, from cashbacks to handouts and whatnot. But the real issue is that we don't want to bake in huge fiscal commitments that we can't afford. So that there are real trade-offs there. I mean, the US has a very, very flexible labour market, for good and ill. They create and destroy jobs at a bewildering speed. So their unemployment rates already jumped to 15%, the highest since the Great Depression. Yet 80% of the people in that survey said they thought their layoffs were temporary. I hope they're right. That sort of flexibility in the labour market is on the one hand good maybe for your macroeconomic outcomes, but boy, it's pretty tough at a household level to be so insecure in your job.
You're warning also about the government keeping a rigorous cost-benefit eye across the investments it makes, and we've talked a lot about infrastructure. I heard the Green Council on this morning, Green Housing Council on this morning, talking about a massive investment in insulation and how that could have dual benefits. Are you worried about the idea of picking winners? Are you anxious that there be decisions that don't crowd out the private sector, number one, and that number two, do deliver actual benefits?
Yep, back to these trade-offs again, between speed how worthwhile the projects are. And the fact is that they will not have had time to do cost-benefit analysis on much stuff at the moment. Obviously, every council in New Zealand will be saying, we've got all these wonderful shovel-ready projects, please fund them. So I'd like to see a fairly pragmatic approach. On the one hand, try and accelerate, for example, their $12 billion infrastructure package they had already announced, but also just leave a box and say, this is future CapEx spending, but we're going to do this right, and we're not going to rush to pick the project yet, because it's very important, given the debt we're going to leave the younger generations with, that we invest in projects that increase the productive capacity of the economy so that these things will, in time, pay for themselves.
What are the other hard questions you believe now need to be asked, given the amount of debt we're racking up, and particularly with that intergenerational equity in mind?
Yeah, the tough questions, yes. Well, firstly, how are we going to pay this back? Of course, the government will be in no hurry to talk about that, because, firstly, austerity is never politically popular, but secondly, if people get a whiff of higher taxes down the track, then that actually gives them incentive to save more now, which is kind of counterproductive when you're trying to stimulate the economy. But we do see the government's books, the forecast likely to show debt going to 40, 50% of GDP, and with 10% deficits. So that, under our fiscal responsibility rules, that is something that is going to have to be addressed to some extent, and even in this budget today, although the details will be left for another day.
It's not just tax. What else might be looked at? I think you've gone near what has always been the third rail of superannuation. Will it come on the table again, especially as the extent of these impacts begin to be felt?
Yeah, I think there are a few holy cows, sacred cows that might be getting a little worried. Yep, superannuation's a biggie. the fact that it's just universal and not means tested and that it kicks in at 65. These are not new issues. Also, the fees-free student thing as well. I mean, as you said, it hasn't led to a huge uptake. Typically, you would see more people go into study when the unemployment rate rises, of course, as people use to look to use their time productively, which does mean that scheme's going to get quite expensive. That would be something else you could look at as well. And capital gains tax. it makes a lot of sense on many levels. Wealth taxes. All these things will come back on the table, as well as the actual levels of income tax in the fullness of time.
But you're not expecting anything signalled this Thursday?
Well, that would kind of be counterproductive in that it would, austerity is contractionary and we're all trying to boost the economy at the moment. But, you know, that's a lot of debt, 40 or 50%, when probably the Treasury's view on what's sustainable in the long run, the previously indicated something like 30%. So, you know, that's a big gap between the long-run principles and the short-run outlook that is going to have to be addressed.
Thank you, Sharon Zollner. Back quickly to Brad Olson and then to Shamabil. What do you see as being the communication around those Treasury debt forecasts that are going to come out on Thursday? And no doubt there'll be plenty of questions, not the least from the opposition, on how all this is going to be funded. Brad?
Yeah, I think the key thing for me is who's going to be left with this debt? Now, look, I'm a young person. I'm probably one of the younger economists around. This is going to fall on young people if we don't have a plan to pay it back. Everyone out there who is already going to be struggling to get into the labour market at present are going to be the people 30 years down the track, if we don't have a plan, that are going to be saddled with this higher debt. So we have to have some sort of idea of what the time frame is and if the government is actually willing to take on some of these hard decisions, or if it's going to pass the buck down to the further generations, not only to pay it back, but to make those tough choices as well. So I think we need to have some very clear communication that the government is thinking about it. I completely agree with Sharon that now is not the time to bring in those options, but to just sort of hide it under the carpet isn't very good either.
And Shamabil?
Look, we've had many decades of not dealing with the hard issues when it comes to the fiscal situation, whether it's around aging or the superannuation questions. I think the communication challenge is more going to be around how can we say that the increase in debt that we're taking now is collectively the right thing to do. And going forward, we have to think about collectively what's the fairest way of paying it back. It doesn't have to be decided this budget. We've got time. This is a crisis budget, and it's only going to be the first act of what the government is going to do in coming weeks and months. So I think unlike other years, this budget is not nearly as big a deal as we have previously seen, because we're going to see the government being extremely interventionist and engaged in economic policy for the rest of this year.
We had a lot of conversations about the importance of data when it comes to tracking this pandemic, and experts saying they want more, they want more detail, and they want it in a timely fashion. Should we now be thinking about the health of the economy in the same way, Shamabil, given the speed at which this restructuring of the economy is happening?
Yeah, look, I think the government has responded very rapidly to providing us a lot more real-time information. So, for example, the Treasury is doing weekly updates, MSD is doing weekly updates, and we're going to have to look at things in very real time, because what's happening in the economy is very unusual. It's extremely non-linear, just like the virus. And in a way, we need to be very responsive to the reality of what's going on. So government should be responding with the immediate needs while having the strategic vision. So what we're seeing in the data right now is things are getting worse. But, you know, comparatively speaking, New Zealand is not as worse off as some other places yet. So in terms of job losses, for example, the benefit increases in Australia have been much bigger than New Zealand already.
Thank you very much, all of you, for the conversation. Shamabil Jacob of Sense Partners. Sharon Zollner is Chief Economist at ANZ. Brad Olson is with Infometrics.